The conference is now being recorded.
Good morning, and welcome to the Yowie Group December quarter conference. Your presenters today are Mr. Bert Alfonso, Global Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Simon Andrew, Commercial and Finance Manager. Please go ahead, Bert.
Thank you, Lydia, and good morning or good evening to everyone on the line. It's a pleasure to have you on the call. First, let me regret the last minute in terms of the call, but I am happy that we're having the call, and I know that some of you, it's quite early in the morning, so thank you for coming on. I'm going to just provide a few highlights from our recent announcement, and then I think the most fruitful way to spend our time is to open it up for Q&A. So we had a good second quarter. We grew the business by 44%. Our net sales were $4.4 million, and that's versus the second quarter of last year. For the first 6 months of the year, our net sales came in at $9.3 million, an increase of 70%. We remain with a strong balance sheet and finished the quarter with almost $29 million of cash and obviously no debt. One of the things that did challenge us during the quarter were some manufacturing interruptions. They did adversely affect our ability to complete some of our sales order fulfillment. Some of that time was planned, which was primarily the installation of the second spoiler. And then we had a number of unplanned outages, both weather-related as well as equipment-related. Our market share continues to perform quite strongly in the U.S. market. The last Nielsen reading at the end of the year, we came in with a market share of 0.95, reflecting our higher distribution levels, and that was an increase versus 0.7, which we measured at the end of the first quarter. We did have a very successful pre-holiday marketing campaign. We spoke about that in anticipation last quarter, and that resulted in almost 19 million views on Facebook and YouTube and positively influences in the market our brand awareness. And while it's our first true investment in the market, we did learn some things that we will use in the campaign pre-Easter, which we are now just in the midst of planning. I'm extremely pleased to announce that we entered into a partnership agreement with the World Conservation Society. It's a 100-year-old organization that has dedicated itself to saving wild spaces and endangered species across the world. They operate out of almost 40 countries, and I believe that not only are we very proud to be coming into the partnership and providing much-needed funding, but in some ways really putting our money where our mouth is in terms of saving the natural world, something which the board and management is very passionate about. And I think there are a lot of marketing opportunities as well as a lot of good to be done through the partnership. And you may see a separate announcement on that regard. And then finally, as I already mentioned, and we talked about just as the first quarter was coming to a close, we did, in fact, put a second foil wrapper online, which doubles our capacity on the packaging side of things and will really be a big benefit going forward in terms of our future growth plans. In terms of other financial results for the quarter, we had a gross margin in Q2 of 55%. There was some impact to that, a little bit less than 100 basis points from some of the disruptions. From a cash perspective, we had a net operating cash outflow of close to $500,000, reflecting receipts of $4.7 million, material purchases of $2.5 million, marketing costs, primarily the campaign of $1 million, and other corporate administrative costs of 1.9. With that, let me open it up for Q&A and answer your questions.
Thank you very much, Bert. Good morning, everyone. This is Lydia from Express Virtual Meetings to conduct the question and answer session today. Guests are invited to ask questions by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad now. You will be placed in a queue. Please listen for your name and I will introduce you to the call. And thank you, guests. We do have some questions coming through. There will be a brief pause while I gather the questions, so please bear with me a few moments. Thank you very much. And thank you everyone for your patience there. Our first question is from Simon Shields from Minash Investors. So please go ahead, Simon.
G'day, Bert. Could you just talk to the degree of impact on the loss of volumes from the manufacturing problems and the distribution problems? What do you think you would have been able to do but for that?
Yeah, I'd say if you take a look at our first quarter and our second quarter, while it's always hard to have an exact quantification, as you know, part of what you run into is at that time of the year, it's very, very busy in terms of receipts at the major retailers. And so they've got, you know, sort of trucks lined up all the way down the road. And so once you miss some queues, even if you have an order, sometimes it's hard to get into the queue again. And so I couldn't give you an exact number, but what I would say is, you know, last quarter we had about 4.9 million. We came in at about 4.4. You know, our best guess is we would have been closer to our first quarter number without some of those issues.
Okay. And then just going forward into the next quarter, it's a seasonally strong quarter. Just talk about the trends that you're seeing.
Yeah, I would tell you that included in the release, we mentioned that we've continued to add some important accounts, and so we're in a couple of hundred Target stores as a test, as well as we're in two of the Kroger the Kroger set of companies. That were in those stores now. So if you continue to add some tier one stores, we are in the dollar store, Dollar General to be specific, and so we're adding new accounts. Our velocities continue to be quite good across the board, particularly at Walmart, where we have the longest trend, if you will. And so you know we're really gearing up for the Easter season. We've got some good order flow. Important to mention that, you know, the manufacturing issues, while they certainly affected the quarter, which seem to be behind us right now, we've been operating quite well. Our inventories aren't where they need to be. We certainly didn't end the quarter with a strong inventory position we would have liked. But the demand picture continues to be quite good. We are getting more and more social media buzz. I do believe that even our partnership, while it's early days with World Conservation, will create an interest in the company in terms of the social good that we bring. So we're pretty confident around order flow going forward, and we do believe we'll have a strong quarter in the third quarter.
Thanks, Bert.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Simon. Our next question is from David McLellan. Please go ahead, David.
Hi, Bert. I'm just inquiring about sort of the changing position of the company. A few quarters ago, the company emphasized sort of the cyclical demand in the U.S. chocolate market. They emphasized how Easter was a very high demand quarter, and as well as Christmas and Halloween. Now I'm just trying to work out if there was a pickup with this Halloween and Christmas period, because it seems to be, I understand the manufacturing issues, but there seems to be still a big drop-off from where we're expecting.
Let me put some perspective around that. In terms of seasonality, you're quite right. The first quarter tends to be a good quarter. You're coming out of the summer months in the U.S., and so there's more chocolate consumption. You're going into more of a holiday season, so the first and second quarters do have that. We don't play as strongly in Halloween. Our current proposition is a very premium product, and Halloween is a giveaway. And so I think as we become more popular, we'll see more participation in Halloween parties and things like that. But the day in and day out Halloween business, which are the miniatures from the major manufacturers, are really far more inexpensive. And so Christmas is quite different. We do have a strong Christmas business. We develop specific Christmas packaging, different colors that create more merchandising opportunity for us in the stores. And as we get into the third quarter, you're quite right, Easter is really our biggest holiday, if you will. We're much more likely to be in the Easter basket than we are, and in the gifting that goes on with Easter, than we are with the low-priced Halloween gifting. The fourth quarter traditionally, which is our sort of April to year-end, unless you have a little bit later Easter, most of the Easter shipments happen in the third quarter. So the fourth quarter would typically be a little bit of a lull until you get back into the late summer. And so that's the traditional pattern. Now, having said that, during any particular year, you might have some circumstances which might drive your business a little bit differently than just the regular background seasonal patterns. So if you took our first quarter, we launched our second series in August, very well received, really good merchandising effort, and we had a very, very strong first quarter. We grew about 100%. Obviously, when you go back a year, it's a huge difference when you're talking about a startup. But having said that, a 70% growth rate in the first half of this year, we're pretty pleased with, even though we think it could have been somewhat higher without the manufacturing issues. And so our expectation is that we will have a strong Easter, and that as we start to expand the business into other countries, while they won't be the size of the U.S. certainly initially, that those are other areas for growth. Further possibilities which we're working on these days are the introduction of a multi-pack. Today we sell really singles at the front end, through e-commerce, you can pick up a 12-pack if you'd like, whether it's from Target or someone else. But it's basically a singles business. So we're not in the candy aisle, if you will, where you tend to find multi-packs. But we do have, we're pretty far along on development of packaging around those multi-packs, and we're bringing those to retailers in the coming months. And so there's an opportunity there to really expand the business and the volume just based on a different purchase occasion. So the seasonal aspect of the category, I would say, remains the same. Halloween, not as big a deal for us these days as the other seasons. And again, any particular, whether it's a product launch or a license or something different that you might do, could have a positive impact on any given quarter. Hopefully that helps.
Thanks a lot, Bert.
Sure.
Thank you very much, David. Our next question is from Todd Hawken. Please go ahead, Todd.
Hello, Bert. To ask about the progress of the Yo-Kai Watch licensed products. Yes, what's come of that, or what's in the works there?
Yeah, Yokai is a license that we're pretty excited about. It's a brand that is investing a lot in the U.S. market, and if I could, you know, contrast it with the license that we've done in the past, we did Angry Birds last year. It was a good proposition, but it was tied to a movie, so those types of licenses sort of tend to peak and then fall off pretty quickly once the movie goes past. Yokai is in many more categories, and again, because it's doing a lot to try to get into the U.S. market, and so it's in, you know, it's in music. They have a pretty significant investment in cartoons on TV, and they operate in a number of different categories across the store. We are pretty far along in the development of the proposition that we'll bring to the market. As you might expect, it's going to be, you know, in our technology and inside of a capsule. It would be the different yokai figures, of which there are many. And then the foils obviously will reflect the yokai. We do have some marketing investment behind that. Part of the agreement is that both sides would contribute to some marketing funds. And our expectation is that we will plan to launch that toward the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, thank you. I just have one more question, and that is, failing to fulfill some orders just in the lead up to Christmas last year. Do you think that has any lasting kind of impact on the reputation with the various vendors that you're selling through?
Yeah, well, it never helps, obviously. What I would tell you is that from a consumer perspective, it's less visible. It wasn't that we ran out of product in the stores. Certainly what it did was it ran down our own inventories, and our most significant distributor, which is McLane, who services all the Walmart stores as well as Target and some convenience stores and the like, their inventories ran down below the levels that they would like to have. So I wouldn't think it so much as, you know, there was a lot of product that didn't get to the store shelf. I think the consumption side continued to be good, and there's a little bit of, you know, refilling of the pipeline, if you will, from behind the scenes. With McLane, obviously, we kept them, fully informed in terms of, you know, when they could expect an order, if it was going to be delayed by, you know, 2 days, 3 days, whatever it would be. And so we have a strong relationship there, and we don't believe there's been any permanent damage from that perspective. So consumer wouldn't have noticed it so much. I wouldn't say there weren't any low inventories, but consumer wouldn't have noticed it so much. It was more in the supply chain, if you will. And it brings us into the quarter with low inventories that we need to rebuild.
And one more question has just occurred to me, and that is, you mentioned like learnings from the marketing campaign which you ran. Could you elaborate on what some of those learnings were?
Yeah, to make it really, really simple, you know, we ran some broadcast television. We did a number of other activities. By far, we think we got the biggest impact from the social media spending. And so going forward, and that wasn't a big surprise to us, but maybe it was more accentuated than we might have expected. And so we'll place even more of a percentage on social media and future campaigns with that learning.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Todd. Our next question is from Breck Fenton from Boardnamet. Please go ahead, Breck.
Hi, Bert. Thanks for the update. I just had a few questions around progress being made at this stage with regards to international expansion. I know that's one of the strategies in place. America's a key market, but is there any progress there? Did you give us an update on you know, when we might hear about any potential new trials geographically? And also, obviously, Australia is sort of the most people do tend to feel there's some, leftover equity here in this market. I know it's a cost of getting stock here. There's been issues in the past. Is Australia still on the radar down the track as a market you'd like to come back to?
Yeah, I would tell you, it's one of the areas that we try to be a little bit maybe cryptic about, only because, you know, there is a pretty big competitive set out there. And as you know, any signaling of market entry, because most of the other players are bigger, so we try to keep that a little bit low-key. But certainly you're quite right. I mean, Australia is going to be a very logical one for us. It's certainly high on our list. It's one that we agree with you fully. There's a fair amount of residual equity, and so you'll certainly see us in the Australian market. You know, we've talked a little bit about North America expansion, and so it's logical to look north. It's a good market and one that we're doing a lot of work to get into. Beyond that, I would say that we've been concentrating far more on some of the other developed markets, if I could call them that, whether it's the European markets or we've done some market work in Asia, in places like Japan. Our product is not, because of its premium nature, it is not as well suited for mass marketing in developing countries, but that doesn't mean we don't have ideas about how to get into those countries with a different variation of the product. That's a little bit further out, I think, in terms of more testing to be done. So we're very focused on the developed markets. We still continue to believe we'll be in additional two markets besides the United States before the fiscal year concludes. It may be toward the end in terms of being in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter, but the markets that you mentioned make sense to us, and those are the ones that we're targeting to be in next.
Okay, great, thank you. And just one other question just on revenues, the sales. Are you still confident of doubling fiscal 16 for this year, so there's, you know, that'll sort of put revenues out maybe at $26 million dollars. So these next couple of quarters obviously need to be strong, but you've stated that you're confident that with Easter and marketing campaigns and manufacturing issues dealt with, that you can hit that number.
Yeah, well, that's still our aim. Obviously, if that changes because we've been public about it, we would certainly update the market. But that's still our aim. We think despite being a little bit shorter, we could have been at the midway point. It's not to the degree that we think it's affecting that forecast.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much there, Breck. Now, our final question is going to be asked by Simon Shields from Minash Investments again. So please go ahead, Simon.
Yeah, Bert, just following up on the earlier answer on the sales. So, I mean, your sales that you report are effectively the sales you send through to the distribution centres, whereas...
No. We have six distribution centres. Sorry to cut you off, but I will let you answer your question. We have six distribution centres of our own. When we ship to those, that's not a sale. A sale is only when it goes to a third party. And so when it goes to McLean's distribution centre, yes.
Yeah, and that's what I was referring to. So basically, you get purchase orders and you send it through, and if you miss your windows, you miss your windows. But what you're saying is at the actual consumer level, they didn't see much of an impact from that. So have you got a feel for what was happening at the consumer level? I mean, those numbers you gave from the Nielsen survey are 52-week mm-hmm. numbers. So there's an averaging effect there as the prior quarter from the year before rolls off and the new one comes on. Have you got more of a spot indication of how your consumer-facing sales actually went?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'd be happy to, have Simon and Andrew follow up with you. We do have 13-week Nielsen numbers, and we can sort of get back to you with the, with the difference between those, which would be less affected by the averaging that you're talking about. As we were unfolding through the quarter, as I mentioned, more of the impact would have been on our own inventories in those six DCs that I talked about and on McLean. That still represents, three quarters of the orders that we get because they are servicing Walmart as well as Target as well as others. They have a certain amount of inventory that they keep that we've agreed on, and so that certainly was drawn down. And we've started to refill that as the quarter was ending. So it would have been less around not having the product at the store level and more about having less sales because of less shipments into, you know, to your point, the DCs of those purchase order.
Can you give an indication of the level of drawdown in those inventories by McLean's, for example?
Well, in total, you know, if you just go back to my earlier comment on, you know, we had about $4.9 million in net sales in Q1 and about $4.4 million, and I think we would have been closer to the $4.9 million had we not had that. Again, it's not an exact number. I don't want you to get scientific, but certainly closer to that. That gives you a sense of the sort of the inventory that we're talking about.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much again, Simon. I've just been informed we've got time for one more question. So our final question today will be from Mike Green from Green Invest. So please go ahead, Mike.
G'day, Bert. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Just a quick one. You've mentioned the breakdown in production. Was that of foilers or is that of the actual chocolate line? And what actually happened and why did it take so long to fix that it was affecting inventory?
Yeah, we had a bit of both. We brought the second foiler on, and it took us a little bit longer to put that on, to get that on stream. Right now it's working just fine. We had a couple of days when it was really storm related. We had a nice storm, which took down the power lines at the plant, and that took a bit of time to get back. And so we really had very little that we could do during those days. We had to do some work on the chocolate line itself. We did have some stoppage related to the software that works the robotics. And so, you know, it was spread around in different places, unfortunately. It wasn't just one issue. The good news is we've had, obviously, the original manufacturers of the equipment were in during the early month of December, and we've been able to, you know, work this through. So the lines are working quite well right now, and we're back on stream.
Okay, thanks, Bert. Just further on that, we're currently running one chocolate line with two foilers on it. Is that correct? And what's the highest peak production you've actually managed out of the line?
Yeah, that is correct. The chocolate line has a far larger capacity than an individual foiler. I think we've mentioned in the past the chocolate line. You know, theoretically, it's built for 100 million units, but
yep.
I would tag that about 85 perhaps. Because there's maintenance and other things involved. And each foiler is built for about 20, and you could probably get about, you know, 17 or 18 out of it. So we're still in a good place in terms of future needs with two foil wrappers online. And so when we're running full time, certainly it gives us the ability to meet all of our orders and rebuild our safety stock, which is what we're working on right now.
So the rest of the line and the infrastructure around the line, the chillers and everything else, can you actually run at that 17,000 foiling on each machine?
No, we absolutely can. The way the factory is, we're at a completely separate building. It really only has Yowie production in it.
Yep.
And all of the you know, whether the infrastructure, whether it be you know, air or cooling or heating or anything like that, the chocolate feeder itself, all is dedicated to that line. So, you know, when we're up and running the way we are today, we really have no concerns about meeting production needs. Unfortunately, we had some issues in December, which we don't expect will recur.
Okay, so there's contingencies now put in place with higher inventory levels or able to move between warehousing or something else so an event like that won't happen in the future?
Well, I never want to say never. all I can say is that, you know, the technicians have been in, they're gone, things are running fine. We're rebuilding our DC inventories. You know, as far as the new year goes, if you want to call it that, our Q3, we've not had any order delays or issues during this current quarter.
I apologize to burden you with a couple of extra questions. Could you cover any detail about the court case? And one last one, we're already in Walmart, which obviously has links around the world, both in Japan and obviously in the UK with Asda. It seems an obvious distribution point to be using them to get into the other countries. Is that part of, is that along the thoughts, or do they not, are they not centralized in the way they do their worldwide operations?
They're not as centralized as you might think, but yes, you know, the person at the highest level that we deal with does manage the category globally, although I would tell you that Walmart does provide a fair amount of independence to their other businesses. Having said that, it's absolutely in our thought process, and it's part of the ongoing discussion, so we do think that will bear fruit. On the court case, back in November, I think we've already mentioned, we did win the trial for the wrapper, and so we have the choice of taking the funds or the equipment. There's another case. The other case is really the case more around any breach of contract that might have occurred. That next date for that is in April, and that was just getting underway. We believe we have a very strong position, given the non-exclusivity of the and the other one is just a matter of you know, choosing the wrapper or the cash, which I think the board will do that relatively quickly.
Right. Is there, at the minute, both parties, Hank and yourselves, both have a bond lodged. In terms of taking the wrapper or the money, is there a reason why that's delayed and not happening prior to the case in April?
You know what, I don't have, I couldn't answer that question, so I can get back to you on that. I'm not sure there's a reason why it doesn't or whether it's just procedural.
Right, okay. We'll leave it to the lawyers there.
Yeah, okay, well, thanks for that.
Thank you very much for your time and the extra questions. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Mike. So, Bert, with that, that's our final question. So, handing back over to yourself and Simon. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Is Simon there?
Thanks, Lydia.
Okay, Simon, listen, I'm going to hang up and call you back.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Okay, thank you, everyone, for attending today. Wishing you all a wonderful remainder of the day. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lydia, for your help, and thanks to everyone. Bye now.